It was the dawn of the third age of mankind, 10 years after the Earth-Minbari War. The Babylon Project was a dream given form. Its goal, to prevent another war by creating a place where humans and aliens could work out their differences peacefully. It's a port of call, home away from home for diplomats, hustlers, entrepreneurs, and wanderers. Humans and aliens wrapped in 2,500,000 tons of spinning metal, all alone in the night. It can be a dangerous place, but it's our last best hope for peace. This is the story of the last of the Babylon stations. The year is 2258. The name of the place is Babylon 5.
Hello and welcome to Chats, a television podcast, Season 6, Chatsalon 5. My name is Alan, and this week, it's time for the recap. Magellan, you're here too. What's up?
Hey, bro.
What up, kid, son, what's friend?
Up? What's up, my friend?
My good pal, we're here. We watched Babylon 5 Season 1 all the way through over the course of about 11 weeks.
Oh, God.
Exactly. Sorry, I thought you like were going to tell me something
God.
Broke. Yes, 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 yes. This is all... Was that you crawling into your chrysalis and turning into a hairy man?
That's me crawling out of my chrysalis.
Oh, okay.
And now I have a beautiful, luscious locks. Nice. Hey, man. What's up? How you doing?
I'm okay. It's cold out. It's very cold.
Yeah. I just went to go get a sandwich from the deli and it was cold.
It's so cold. Was it the deli that I went to? The one with the nice men?
Yeah.
I like them.
Same nice men.
I love them.
They were nice to me again.
I appreciate them. And I appreciate you for being here while I and you together discuss Babylon 5 Season 1, the recap. Yeah. So for those who haven't listened to a recap chats episode before, basically what we're going to do here is we are going to do a couple of things. We're going to summarize Season 1 for those who didn't watch it yet or who did watch it and want kind of a neat, tidy version of it. After that, we are going to kind of talk about our general thoughts on the season. Following up, we're going to be ranking all of the episodes of Season 1 under four categories: essential, highlight, fine, and lowlight. And finally, we're going to make some predictions as first-time watchers for what we think is going to happen in Season 2 of the show.
Yeah. So this episode will kind of serve as it can either be a reflection point if you've been following along with us, or it can be a jumping-on point. If you just want kind of the basic facts of Season 1, and maybe you want to go back and watch a few episodes, because maybe you watched Babylon 5 a long time ago, or you've heard that Season 1 isn't as important as the other seasons, but you want to get a sense for what it's like, this can be your episode to figure out how to do that, based on our opinions and our takes.
Our objectively right and indisputable takes.
Right.
So to start with the truly the most objective part, let's get into what happens in or what happened in Babylon 5 Season 1.
Okay.
So here we have the theme song of the show actually does a good job of summarizing this premise and getting you teed up to talk about it and think about it. So I'm just gonna read the text of the theme to people.
Yeah, and we'll do a sort of literary close reading.
Right.
Of it, yeah.
So it goes like this. It was the dawn of the third age of mankind, 10 years after the Earth-Minbari War. The Babylon Project was a dream given form, its goal to prevent another war by creating a place where humans and aliens could work out their differences peacefully. It's a port of call, home away from home for diplomats, hustlers, entrepreneurs, and wanderers. Humans and aliens wrapped in 2,500,000 tons of spinning metal. All alone in the night. It can be a dangerous place, but it's our last best hope for peace. This is the story of the last of the Babylon stations. The year is 2258. The name of the place is Babylon 5. So, to get right into it, the third age of mankind. What were the first two ages of mankind?
Yeah, good question. We don't know. We just know that we're at the beginning of one. presumably the Earth-Mimbari War is the end of the second age of mankind.
Oh, yeah. Maybe. Okay.
I would assume the first age of mankind is everything that happens before we go into space.
Right, up until we meet other aliens or something, yeah.
Yeah, and then the second age is like, whatever, things are going the way they're going, and then we almost get wiped out.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're in the third age. That's my guess.
I think there are like theories and things on the internet that suggest exactly that. First age is like people on Earth living, fighting, reproducing, etc. Second age, we've discovered other races and we're moving into space. Third age is recovering from the second age, is like war and conflict and trying to create peace.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
We are, and you know, 10 years after the Earth-Mimbari War puts us pretty close to that conflict. We're not distant from it at all. You know, 10 years, pretty much all the people that are on the show were alive. We don't really see a lot of kids in Babylon 5 yet.
No.
But it's interesting that
everybody was involved in the Earth-Mimbari War or was in a position of power when it was going on.
Exactly. Like, maybe it'll be interesting to someday see someone who's younger than 10 years old who, like, has never known that war and not known that conflict and doesn't know why the Earth and the Earthlings and the Mimbari don't like each other.
Yeah.
But, yeah, right now people were either directly involved or it happened around them, sort of like Dr. Franklin's whole situation.
Mm-hmm.
The Babylon Project, so we know that this is, like, a long-term thing, was a dream-given form, so it was planned out for a while. It's sort of a pie-in-the-sky idea. Its goal to prevent another war by creating a place where humans and aliens could work out their differences peacefully. So immediately staking a line in the sand.
Between humans and aliens.
Yes, and that they have differences and those need to be sorted out.
But it could also mean that there are differences among aliens, as we see actually happening in the show.
True. Like the Narn and Centauri, for example.
Yeah. Although there is definitely a human-centric point of view because we are humans watching the show.
Right, we can't not be. Better or for worse, we're just all humans here. And working out their differences peacefully suggests that, this is a direct response to the Earth-Mimbari War. Like, okay, we tried that didn't work. Let's try a completely different method.
Yeah.
And then we'll come back to the idea of the Babylon Project and how this is not the first iteration of it in the next part.
Now, what's interesting to me is that the Babylon Project is a dream-given form. How long was it dreamed up if this is only 10 years after that war?
Right.
Like,
was
Babylon 1? Was that right after the war, or was there like a time before the war when they were trying to do this Babylon Project thing?
That is a very good question because we know that there were four other Babylon stations, but we don't really get a sense for when they were built. But if all four were built and destroyed in 10 years, and that's pretty ridiculous.
Right. Yeah.
You would think it lasted a little bit longer than that. But yeah, dream given form kind of suggests that it's been planned for a while.
Mm-hmm.
It's a port of call, which constantly, you know, it's a good reminder that, like, hey, guys, some of the best stories of like people gathering and conglomerating in a single space are on Earth, at least, will be by the ocean because, you know, you have a place where people travel and come to and visit. And it's sort of like Babylon 5 is a mixture of like an embassy with an airport. With a it's a hub ship.
And it seems like maybe it's in neutral space between all of these different alien civilizations that we meet in the show.
Right. It lies above Epsilon 3. It can't be moved because it's in exactly a right good spot politically to be safe.
Yeah, there are five major races, as far as we know of, that are represented on Babylon 5 diplomatically. So we have the humans from Earth, and we later learn also Mars has some humans on it.
Mm-hmm.
The Mimbari, who are sort of like gray, cool head shape people. And the Mimbari have like a religious caste and a warrior caste. And
a worker caste.
And a worker caste, and they're kind of this like serene, at least the religious caste that we meet, they're kind of very serene and spiritual. We have the Narn, who look sort of like turtles without shells.
Yeah.
And they're
reptilian,
more,
yeah.
they're reptilian and they're more kind of real politic, like Machiavelli's The Prince sort of approach.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. We have the Centauri, who are all bald with big hair.
Huge, like fan-like hair, yeah.
Huge hair. And then we have the Vorlons, who sort of look like if Bionicle was made by M.C. Escher.
Wow.
Like, this is what they would be.
You're right. Thanks. They're like booger toilets in breathing costumes.
Yeah.
Sorry, continue.
No, those are the five main races, and they have sort of diplomatic representation on the Council of Babylon 5, and then there are also a bunch of other assorted aliens of different species who are affiliated with one of those five, or they form a confederation of non-affiliated alien species.
Right. You know, and the Minbari have this whole thing where their response to the war was, since their whole culture is about saving face and helping others and working in service of others, the end of the war put them in a really rough spot because they ran out of things to do for other people. Not having a war to fight tends to pit people on edge in the home country, as we've seen historically in real life and on the show. So the Minbari, as we slowly learn over the season at home, are having this sort of crisis of conscience with, like, what do we do as a society? What do we push towards now that we aren't going to be in a major conflict, hopefully, anymore?
Right.
And the Narn, while being, like you said, very Machiavellian, very, like, we need to get to our perfect desired place, are also kind of aloof and kind of seem like they have big plans laid out, but they're not doing any of them yet. But
yeah, but it also seems like there are problems back on Narn, like their civilization has been damaged in some way.
Right. They've had conflict with the Centauri long enough that it's kind of wrecked them, and they want to fix their home world and get to the desired future.
Yeah, and the Vorlons are a big question mark. We have no
idea question mark.
Anything about them. The Centauri, I think, probably see themselves as the most quote-unquote civilized of the different civilizations, and sort of have like a Roman Republic vibe to them.
Yep.
And then the humans, you know, it's what you would expect from humans. There are some people who want peace. There are some people who want to put Earth first and all that junk.
And yeah, we have all these ambassadors, and sort of our main cast of the show are primarily ambassadors and the security that work for them and their attachés, etc. So we are obviously our captain, Jeffrey Sinclair. It was raised by Jesuits, as he's quick to remind you. And he served in the Earth Minbari War on the Earth side. And during a conflict called the Battle of the Line, he was in a ship that was damaged and crashed near Minbar's home planet, the Minbari home planet. And he basically blocked out for, I believe they say it's like 24 hours or something, or a significant period of his life. He wakes up, the whole conflict is over. He's no longer with the Minbari. He's home, and the war is over. And he missed it, and we don't actually ever come to understand within this season what happened in that. So that's kind of one of our biggest mysteries.
It's a big question mark, yeah.
It suggested that the Minbari did something to him. It suggested that they used him, because they did what part is confirmed is that they planted him as the leader of Babylon 5. They sort of like voted to keep him up ahead of anyone else, presumably because they have something in his head that makes him sort of their puppet.
It's a question mark. We can cover the other main characters in a moment. Let's keep reading this.
I'm sorry.
Intro text. Humans and aliens wrapped in 2,500,000 tons of spinning metal. So pretty heavy. There's not really a...
Well...
Oh, wait. Oh, we skipped protocol. So diplomats. All right. Yeah. So each of those species has a representative.
Yep.
Who we'll talk about over the course of talking about the episodes. Hustlers. Do we meet some hustlers? I guess in a couple episodes we do.
Yeah, there's like the gangsters and the people that work in the Zocalo and do sneaky dealings. Yeah.
Yeah. Entrepreneurs. I don't know about that one, actually.
Well, the only person who seems remotely close to an entrepreneur of sorts is like Morden, and he's definitely not like an entrepreneur in the monetary sense. It's more like
he's more of the devil, actually.
Correct.
Yeah. And wanderers. Yeah, that works. There's some wanderers.
And yeah, most definitely. We're all kind of wanderers on this on this ship. So yeah, humans and aliens are having 2,500,000 tons of spinning metal. I only think about this in the context of other space, like sci-fi shows that take place in space. That's really big. It is the whole show pretty much takes place on Babylon 5. And they can get by with that because it's big enough that it has a lot of different biomes. They have an outdoor dome area that shows the sphericalness of the whole ship. It works on Earth time because it spins at approximately like 24 hours a revolution, I think. It is hovering above a planet, so it has interactions with the nearest planet near, but it's not close to like a million other planets. It's only near one that we know about, at least. And it has centers for commerce, centers for military, and they all seem to be kind of blended. It's not like, you know, on Star Trek, the classic, like the Enterprise, the whole top, that like spherical disc thing, is where people hang out, is where people live. The bottom is where Star Trek happens, as I understand it, at least.
I see.
So those are like very clearly delineated, whereas here it's just like, no, you can go from the Zocalo to the captain's chair like in like a couple minutes. They're just, you know, locked, obviously, doors, but it's all one big kind of messy ship. It's kind of suggested that like even though this is the fifth iteration, it's not perfect.
Yeah, and it's very rare that we see scenes happen somewhere other than Babylon 5.
Right, the only major example comes towards the end of the season when they land on Epsilon 3, but even that is like...
Or scenes with like the Gray Council, who are the leaders of the Minbari.
Right, and that's just on another ship, and it's like...
It's not... like a dark room.
Right, it's not even a set, really, yeah.
Yeah.
So...
Let's see, All Alone in the Night. Sure, space is dark.
Sure. But like, what is night?
Right.
Night is, I guess, for them, night is like the revolution on the other half of like not facing the bright spot, but it's just silly, like all alone in the night. Because I guess the thing about them having to be on neutral territory is they can't, they're not like calling help all the time. Every time they try to call help, someone's like, we can't get to you. No, we can't. We don't have time to help you. So that's where that comes from.
And then these next two sentences, it's they're talking about the last best hope for peace. This is the last of the Babylon stations. So the question is this the last because it succeeds, or the last because they give up, or what?
Or is it just the last because they won't have, yeah, like they won't have any more funds to do it again. So it's like their final shot.
Right. The year is 2258. This whole first season takes place in that year. Then presumably the rest of the show takes place in the future.
Yep.
The name of the place is Babylon 5.
Babylon. The name Babylon is charged as well, if we really want to play this like English teacher read.
Let's do it. Let's play it.
It's a key kingdom in ancient Mesopotamia from the 18th to 6th centuries. The city was built on the Euphrates River and divided in equal parts along its left and right banks with steep embankments to contain the river's floods. So it's in modern-day Iraq. It's like in the middle of it. Also, Saddam Hussein lived in Babylon. What? Okay. that's what we're dealing with. That's the world we're dealing with. So who lives on this ship?
Well, we talked about Sinclair. He's the commander. He's got some questions about what happened to him during the war. Generally, he's a very principled, calm source of wisdom. He's often turned to solve complex situations. The ambassadors, when they quarrel, they try to get him to step in the middle and resolve things.
Yeah.
Generally, it seems like people trust him. People on Babylon 5 trust him. But he starts to make decisions that make Earth Central a little cranky. And that comes back to bite him later. His chief of security is Michael Garibaldi, who is kind of brazen. He's a little lascivious. He is a recovering alcoholic. He gets brutally violent sometimes.
Yeah, he has a very violent streak.
In a way that the show does not fully reckon with. And he's, you know, a super cop guy. In this phase where, like, he's kind of part Bruce Willis from Die Hard.
Yeah.
And kind of part, like, we know that cops are shitty. Like, this cop character is shitty, I mean.
Right.
But he's sort of straddling this transition point in pop culture where I don't know. You can't really like totally negatively portray a police officer.
Exactly.
Yet. The lieutenant commander is Ivanova. What's Ivanova's first name?
Susan.
Susan. Susan Ivanova, who is, she's kind of taciturn. She's kind of all business. But sometimes she lets her guard down. She had, her dad died. Bummer. Her mom was had telepathy powers.
Uh-huh.
And she tried to hide it, and then she went crazy because her powers, and then she killed herself. So that's haunting
Ivanova. Ivanova is haunted by that, and as a result, distrusts most members of PsyCorp, but seems like she has a spot in her heart for Lieutenant Talia. The PsyCorp person on Babylon 5, their resident psychic, or telepath rather.
Mm-hmm.
What is Talia's full name actually?
Winters.
Talia Winters. So they both have a situation going on. Talia, from another perspective, was raised with PsyCorp and was for sort of like bred as a telepath from a very young age. She had a lot of respect for the PsyCorp for a while and made a lot of friends there, including the guy from that one episode who becomes. And then as she gets older, starts to grow to harvest a deep mistrust, distrust of PsyCorp because, you know, as she's tried to be, she's very empathetic. She's very like careful of other people's feelings and what she says to people and how to treat her own powers with other people. But as she realizes that like PsyCorp is up to some really sketchy stuff and not paying attention to consent and stuff and maybe doing some really like broader scale illegal things, she is sort of distancing herself from the greater PsyCorp and trying to become one of the good psychics.
Mm-hmm. The only other major human that we have to be aware of is Dr. Franklin, who is who's head of the medical team on Babylon 5.
Yeah. Chief medical officer.
Chief medical officer. He's a doctor man. He's got his scruples.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much what we know about Dr. Franklin.
Well, he's got his scruples. He's very ethical. He replaced Dr. Benjamin Kyle from the Babylon 5 The Gathering movie for reasons that we don't fully understand yet, but that's presumably going to come back at some point. And we know that he's had friends and he sort of was around during the Earth and Bar War but didn't fight in it because he believed that you shouldn't be killing anyone unnecessarily, and he wanted to help the Minbari who were injured instead of like stealing from them and like not treating them. He said, "I want to treat them," and was basically discharged from having even a chance to fight in the military. He's claimed a stake in where he falls on all that stuff.
Yeah. Then each race or species has their own diplomats. So for the Centauri, who again are kind of this like Roman Republic group, very fancy clothes, big hair, you have Londo Malari, who he's funny, he's charming.
Most importantly, he's sad.
He's very sad. He's kind of aging. He misses his days of always having sex a lot, but also regrets things.
Mm-hmm.
And he makes a bad choice at the end of the season that we could talk about later.
Yeah.
He hangs out with Veer, who's sort of a Josh Gad type.
Too true, too true. Roasted to both Josh Gad and the actor who plays Veer, but yes.
Yeah. That's all you need to know about Veer. Londo is bitter rivals with Jakar, who is the chief ambassador of the Narn, the lizard turtle people.
Yeah.
Jakar is a little more ruthless, a little more... also very charismatic, but in more of a seemingly malicious way, especially in the movie that leads up to season one, where he's clearly the guy who's making bad stuff happen.
Right.
Jakar is assisted at first by an attaché named, I don't remember her name.
Natoth?
No, there was someone before Natoth.
Oh, Kodath?
Kodath, and then she gets replaced with Natoth, who kind of mirrors his attitude mm-hmm. towards other races and towards solving problems. The Vorlon ambassador is... What's his face?
Oh my god, what is it? Kosh?
Kosh. We don't know anything about Kosh except that he's scary.
Well...
And he likes that people are scared of him.
He likes that people are scared of him. He probably has a sort of mischievous streak. And the Vorlons probably have some sort of conflict going on with whoever Morden is working with. Because Morden and Kosh have a meeting that seems to go kind of badly, but we don't really see the results of it.
Yeah.
And we don't know what's going on there, but that they're clearly big players at some point.
Mm-hmm. And then the only other ambassadors are the Mambari ambassadors. We have Delenn, who secretly is a member of the Grey Council, the like leadership of Mambari society. Mm-hmm. She's very patient and thoughtful, and she's there to study humans, and she likes humans and thinks they're cool. And she always has something inspirational and quote-worthy to say. And she hangs out with Lanier, who is sort of like... trying to think of a comparison for Lanier. He's sort of like the Fez of the show.
A little bit like the charming foreigner, the charming young foreigner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, very naive, likable.
Never seen a boob in his life.
Yeah. Inexperienced, mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. So... That's the cast, man.
That's who we got. So you have all these friends who are definitely not friends. It's important to note, actually, that, yeah, them being ambassadors and not, like, being star-crossed pals who, like, meet up, like a la Farscape or Star Trek, where it's like, well, we all work together, so I guess we like each other. It's just like, yeah, we all live here. It doesn't mean we have to like each other.
Yeah, sometimes they hate each other.
Jakar and Londo never get along. They never, in this season... have a moment where like, oh, you know what? Except that part where they're like, you know what I like too? Boobs. They do have that moment, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's a pretty cool cast, and different episodes focus on different members of them. We kind of don't... The show so far, it seems like it's not focusing on big, like, all-encompassing character plots. It's more like, this is a Jakar-focused episode, and this is a Londo episode, and this is a Garibaldi episode. Which is fine so far as we set up the sort of stakes, but it feels like the show is building towards a much broader conflict.
Right. It seems like it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I would ask you then, Magellan, mm-hmm. what did you think of season one of Babylon 5?
I had a lot of fun watching it.
Mm-hmm.
It feels different than many other shows that I've seen. I think because it has this loose ensemble situation... where certain characters who you like might just not be in the show for five episodes and then they're back. And it's fine. Like, it makes sense. And I appreciate... I don't think there are many other sci-fi shows that situate their whole cast in one place and, like, don't move around. Because usually space shows are all about moving around, but instead it's about who comes through this area and we're kind of the eye of the storm while other current events are going on around us. And just the idea of examining diplomacy and peacemaking and international relations and what makes those things work or not work is very fertile ground for intrigue and for things that I find engaging. So overall, I like the premise, and I like the characters a lot. I have my favorites. I have people that I love to see in any moment. There was plenty of stuff that was kind of like bogus season one throwaway stuff that happens in any show.
Oh, yeah.
But overall, I strongly recommend that people watch it.
Yeah. Especially, like, if this show is going to get all big and epic and war-focused, like, you got to watch this stuff. Because we're always, here at Chats, we're of the mindset that, like, it's not worth skipping episodes unless they're, like, actively, offensively bad. Right. And then even if they are, sometimes it's interesting to be like, oh, that's cool that they did that. I'm going to wonder how they bounce back from that.
Mm-hmm.
So watch season one. And if you don't have the time to watch all of it, we can we did the work for you of telling you which ones you absolutely have to watch. But you know, if you're gonna appreciate when the show gets serious, it's nice to enjoy it when it is character focused and silly.
Mm-hmm. What did you think of season one overall?
It's a lot of fun. I feel like this show has gone into my brain a lot more than other chat shows have, just because the world... I was just thinking about this on the walk that I was just on. The world of Babylon 5 is so interesting to me. Not just because it posits a play, like an actual scenario where we built a physical structure based on the idea that peace is still possible after one of the most brutal, like, heavy bloodshed wars of all time. And, like, that is very inspirational and hopeful to me, but also... like, just how the politics work and how sort of the background of things comes together is something I feel like we still haven't seen enough of.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me really appreciative that there is so much extra material if you want to, if I want to get into that. Mm-hmm. Because Babylon 5 is not just like we developed a cool world and then our show ended early, like so many of its type. Right. It's like, no, we got our full show. We got movies, we got books, we got comic books, we got forum posts from the creators. We have every single thing you want related to this show is explained at some point in one of those things, I think. So, you know, I really appreciate that as somebody who kind of generally likes lore.
Right.
It feels juicy in that way. And it's also supported by the fact that, like, I don't think any lore is worth having if the characters on the actual show are not interesting. And so far, I kind of like everybody in a unique way.
Yeah, I like watching everybody.
Yeah, they're all good in different ways.
Great. Well, maybe we should break down for folks the how we bucket these episodes and what we think is worth watching or not worth watching. So, you want to go from low to high?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right.
Okay, great. So we outlined there are 22 episodes of season one. And we split them into four different buckets, and we'll go through them low to high. So we have our low lights, which are the episodes that if you are a skipper, you can skip these without repercussion. We have our fine bucket, which are episodes that you don't need to watch. There might in these episodes be a thing that maybe matters, but probably not.
Right.
Highlights, which are episodes that we say are fun for a certain reason and probably matter to the major plot. And then there are essential episodes, which are kind of the flip of that, where they definitely matter to the overall plot and they are probably fun.
Yeah. Important, not necessarily good. Highlights are good, not necessarily important.
Great. That's a good way to phrase it. Mm-hmm. So let's start with our lowlights, the ones that you can just kind of... go past.
Yes. You want me to go first?
Sure, go for it.
The first low light for Babylon 5 Season 1 is Season 1 Episode 4, Infection. This is the one where an artifact is brought onto Babylon 5 by Dr. Franklin's mentor, and it turns his assistant into an android killing machine with a big gun. The only thing that's remotely salvageable at this episode is Sinclair and Garibaldi talking about, like, hey, you can't just run out and die.
True.
Like a Star Trek character. You're the captain. Don't do that. But hey, I just told you that happens. You no longer need to watch Infection. It's widely considered one of the worst episodes of the show. We don't learn enough about Franklin to make it worth him being the focus of the episode. Sinclair acts really out of character in this one. Even though it's so early, it already felt out of character.
Mm-hmm.
And there isn't a lot of good character stuff. It's just kind of like the plot happens and... yeah. I don't think Babylon 5 needs a horror episode. I don't think it needs this guy's burrowing through the walls with his stupid gun. He's going to kill people. It's not that kind of show.
No. I agree. Yeah. I think when we watched the episode, we did not care for it. So
No.
My first low light is Season 1, Episode 9, Deathwalker. Deathwalker is an episode where... there is this like well-known war criminal who all these different aliens hate, but she's developed a way for people to become immortal. So there's people who want to like keep her alive to keep the immortality thing. I don't know. To be honest, this is an episode where I think I may have fallen asleep. Because I literally barely remember it. and it's just totally skippable. And it's also annoying because it's one of these episodes that introduces a huge piece of technology that is just not reckoned with at all because Kosh blows it up.
Right. Yeah. It's exactly right. It's this recurring thing where, like, it's the future, so we have technology that's, like, incredible and powerful, but we can't keep that on the show because that would break so many rules, and we would have to make the whole show about this. So no immortality, no more Jadur. The B-plot is even worse. It's like, oh, my God, Kosh finally gets a plot, and he just talks to another guy, and Talia watches it, and it turns out that they're both just playing to troll Talia, and that's the whole – it's like a joke.
Right.
This is the episode where we learn that Kosh is a bit mischievous, and we don't know why, but he is.
Right.
Maybe he's just a naughty boy. But that's all we get. My next low light episode is episode 15, which is called Grail. This is the episode where the man who spends his whole life searching for the Holy Grail arrives on Babylon 5.
Yep.
Jinxo.
It's just like, what show is this?
Is this, I think I said in the episode, it felt like a fantasy show plot. Where a guy comes onto the ship and he's like, I'm on this long quest and I have these robes and this cool staff and I have been searching for years, but it's gonna be so worth it when I get to the end. And the only like emotional payoff is that this other guy, Jinxo, who thinks that every time he's been on a Babylon station, it blew up the next day. He thinks he's cursed, so if he leaves Babylon 5, then it's gonna blow up. He basically the wizard guy tells Jinxo like, hey man. You're control your own fate. You're not bad luck.
Just listening to you describe the plot, I'm like, who cares?
And it's one of those production things where we always hear emails about. We always read emails of like, oh, these characters had to be not important to the story because like they're just gonna die at the end, or you know, we can have emotional arcs with them. But it's like, I don't care. Then as a result of that, I do not care.
Right.
Is this not the episode where Garibaldi and Lanier do the motorcycle thing, or no?
I think it is.
Okay, that's the only thing you need.
Hey guys, little note from Alan here. I realized after recording this that I was talking about Eyes. Eyes is the episode of Babylon 5 where Lanier and Garibaldi build a motorcycle together. Before you send in your corrections, thank you for paying attention. Good on you. I caught it as well. Thanks. Back to the episode.
Right. The final low light here is season 1, episode 14, the episode just before, called TKO. It's an episode where Garibaldi's old friend comes to the station and he's like a martial arts fighter and gets into a martial arts competition.
No.
And the other plot is that Ivanova's rabbi comes to the station to help her deal with her father's death. And it's just two plots that do not need to exist.
Ivanova is handled really weirdly in this batch of episodes, honestly. It's
just this real like paternalist tone towards Ivanova that left a bad taste in my mouth.
Exactly. Yeah, it's just a man telling her, you need to learn to grieve. And she's like, I don't want to. And he's like, no, really. And then she does. She learns to grieve for her father. The fighting plot is like kind of just terrible.
Yeah.
Like, it's this whole, like,
it's about somebody who's not one of our main characters.
Right. Even their relationship to Garibaldi doesn't matter. It's just him being like, oh, the way that I ingratiate myself with the aliens is that I, like, I respect their culture. But it's just such a dumb, simple way to say that it does not land in the slightest.
Nope.
Don't watch these episodes. We did it for you.
Exactly. Let's move on to our fines. Fine. These are fine. I'll go first.
Okay.
We each have three. My first fine episode is season 1, episode 5. It's called The Parliament of Dreams. And there's this kind of like whatever throwaway plot about how it's a conference on religious beliefs on Babylon 5.
Oh, that's this one? Oh, yucko.
Yeah, and it ends with this weird scene of Sinclair having all the ambassadors meet representatives of all the Earth religions, which just doesn't land quite the right way.
Nope.
It also features Sinclair's old lover, Catherine Zakai, is that right? Who they have this whole thing of, let's not do this again. But this was in that phase of Babylon 5 where every episode had somebody's old lover come back to hang out with them.
Right.
The fun plot is the plot with Jakar, where he thinks that he's going to be assassinated.
Yeah.
And so he's trying to, he's freaking out. It's a really good Jakar plot. But otherwise, it's totally skippable.
Yep. It's honestly, it's one of the most immediate Jakar episodes, and that's like what's worth watching about it is he's awesome. And the show, we didn't get a lot of episodes with him this season. So when he's there, it's like, oh, cool, he's paranoid.
Right. So it's worth watching.
Honestly,
that,
man,
if you care.
Is the best Jakar stuff so far in the show The Gathering?
Probably. Yeah, I can't think of another Jakar, like substantially Jakar plot.
Yeah.
I like the plot where he and Londo are fighting over the that flower or
yep,
whatever.
Yep, yep, yep. And he's like, yep.
I don't remember what episode that is, though.
He's religious.
Yeah.
That was the workers' rights episode. That's by any means necessary.
Oh, great. Okay.
My next or my fine episode here is season one, episode two, Soul Hunter. Not a lot to say about this one. An alien who steals the souls of the living arrives on the station, putting a little end's life in danger. Again, horror episodes are dumb on a show like this. I mostly like this one for because it was the first like learning about the Minbari sort of episode. And that they have myths and sort of boogeymen who are actually real and the Soul Hunter thing. And we also hear about the Great Council for the first time this early in the show. And it's like, whoa, that's so cool. What is that? And then the actual A plot of the episode is just like, this guy's going to steal souls. And then Sinclair pulls Captain James T. Kirk and points a laser at him and like puts his soul into a crystal. And that's it.
Yeah, it's whatever. I don't have anything to say.
It's inoffensive.
It. Yeah. My next fine episode of season one, episode six, it's called Mind War. And again, we have a former lover, Talia Winter's former lover, comes back. He's a telepath and whoops, he's a super telepath who can like kill people and use telekinesis also. And some Psycorp people are trying to catch him and kill him or stop him.
Jason Ironheart.
And then it all culminates in him becoming, which is he turns into like a light man and tells Sinclair that he'll see him in 100 years or something.
A million years. Yeah.
Million years, excuse me. Cool. And that's it.
Oh boy, I accidentally clicked on something that's not really a spoiler because it's so dumb that I can't even process what I just looked at.
Yeah.
Can I describe it to you right now?
Yeah.
Okay. If you go to the wiki page for Mind War and you click on the line where he says a million years, you're taken to the bottom of the Babylon 5 timeline. And it's like in the year 10,851 AD or whatever, the humans get into in the Vorlon encounter suits. You know, all the humans are Vorlons.
Wait, what?
Like, maybe, like, the universe becomes uninhabitable, so the humans just make a bunch of encounter suits and become Vorlons. Like, not literally, but, like, they take on the Vorlon form. It's weird.
Oh, I'm hoping you didn't just spoil what Vorlons are.
No, I don't think Vorlons in the future are humans or anything like that. I think I'm just saying, like, they put encounter suits on and, and do that. Cool. So, this show is weird. My next, fine episode is season one, episode seven, The War Prayer. Talk about episodes I barely... Oh, hey, Susan meets her old lover, who is now part of a pro-Earth terrorist group that plans to kill an alien ambassador on Babylon 5.
Yep.
I only believe it's one of five because I really like Ivanova. And the joke of, like, if she dated a guy, I guess. That seems fake, but okay, I believe it. And we learn about Home Guard. It's the weird thing is, like, a lot of the worst episodes of Babylon 5... have seeds for good things. So, right. Like, we hear about Home Guard in this episode.
Yes, which becomes, like, one of the central conflicts of the show.
Right. But alas. There's nothing else to it. He meets an old lover. She thinks he's okay. He's like, come on, baby. And then, like, the racists start killing people. And then it's like, oh, no, he's part of the racist group. And then he gets arrested.
My final fine episode is season one, episode 19, A Voice in the Wilderness, part two. We'll talk about A Voice in the Wilderness more when we talk about part one, so I don't need to say too much about the plot. It's just, I don't know. they're stabilizing the planet below Babylon 5, and they almost get into a fight with some random aliens, and you know,
Dolan's friend becomes the guy,
right? And parts of it are fun, but this episode is kind of just about like unspooling the things that were spooled up in part one.
Yeah, and we get the guy from Earth Force who's like, you need to start a war with these guys, and they're like,
yeah,
no.
He's cool. Like, I like him. He's probably the best part of the episode.
Yeah, yeah, I agree.
Yeah. What's our last fine?
Our last fine is season 1, episode 11, which is called Survivors. Garibaldi in this episode is framed for causing a fatal explosion. There is a really common thing on Babylon 5 season 1 where something explodes and then we spend the whole episode figuring out who blew it up. Garibaldi is framed by a woman who he knew as a child. When she was a child, when he was working on Io, she's the daughter of his only friend on the Io. Is it on Io or is it no? Or is it Europa? It's one of the like moons of Mars or something. He was working as like a miner, and he had like no friends, and he had one friend. And he had a daughter, and she calls him Uncle Mike. And then we learn that he's an alcoholic. Again, Garibaldi is a really fascinating character who's got a lot of huge flaws. And while it is cool to see him like coping with his alcoholism coming back and or him like sort of having the urges again, the only like saving grace is like him being an action star in this episode is kind of fun. Him like stopping the explosion.
Yeah, it's just not the alcoholism isn't really handled super well.
No, God, no, no.
Yeah,
but it's hinted again. It's one of those things that's like hinted at and you see it briefly. But yeah, the way it's handled here is stinky.
Yes.
So let's get into our highlights, the episodes that we actually thought were pretty damn cool.
Yeah. You can go first.
Excellent. My first highlight is season one, episode 10. We don't have to say season one anymore. These are all season one. Episode 10, Believers. This is actually one of my like personal favorite episodes of the show so far. It's the one where the alien family refuses surgery for their dying child, and Dr. Franklin is trying to convince them to take the surgery. But it's this sort of like moral question of like, in their culture, cutting open a child means that you're taking their soul out, or you're doing any sort of invasive surgery on a person is like taking their soul out. So they'll basically be dead. And he's like, no, but that's your religion. I'm not going to say it's dumb, but your religion is going to make you your child be dead. And I can prevent that if you stop being jackasses. I really appreciate that this doesn't end clean. At the time, I felt kind of iffy about it. The more I think about this episode, the more I am A-okay with, like, it seems like Franklin's going to come out of it, like, super smart and correct and good. And he does the surgery. And it's like, yes, finally, they're going to learn the error of their ignorant ways. And it's like, no, bud, you don't just get to do that to another culture. They get to make that decision. You healed their son. They're going to kill their son. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's... the joy of this episode is, and joy is a weird word to use, I suppose, but what you get from this episode is that kind of moral quandary, that ethical dilemma, because there is not really a clear answer of what the character should or should not have done, because it pits Franklin and Sinclair against each other, who are usually like the two most reasonable wise dudes,
right?
And you get to see fully played out this conflict between their different like higher purposes and higher missions. My first highlight is season 1, episode 3, Born to the Purple, one of my fave eps. Basically, it's Londo falls in love with a woman who is a nightclub dancer, but also actually secretly has been hired to steal information from him. And she's like enslaved to some dude who's trying to undermine the Centauri government. And what's fun about it is that Londo is such a sad boy. He just wants love and he doesn't care who it's with. He kind of cares, but not really. He just regrets his life and wants true love.
Two questions. Is this the episode that features the I forgot my dancing shoes or I don't know how to dance, that whole line?
Yes, certainly, yes.
And then my second question is, can you believe that that's episode 3 of the series? We just get a hot drop of one of the best lines in this fucking show already. Is the whole Londo is talking to...
I think it's this episode. I actually don't want to commit to that and be wrong.
Well, I'm just going to look up Londo, dancing, shoes, Babylon 5. And I'm going to confirm it, and we're going to feel super smart. What episode is it from? It's from War Prayer. It's not from this episode. I'm sorry. But Londo's good. Did you know? Londo's good. Also, the... Like, I don't know. I think the spy plot is kind of fun.
Yeah. I just love Londo in this and love the interplay between him and the... I don't remember her name.
The woman?
Oh, yeah, what's her name?
I'm going to see if you can figure it out. I believe you
know
can do it.
It.
Do you want me to tell you?
Oh, Ladira? Is that right?
Adira.
Adira. Dang.
Basically had it.
She's really great. She's a good performer.
Very good. Yeah.
Yeah, so...
Can't wait till she comes back in season 5.
It really bought me into Londo as a character who I could kind of connect with and see the humanity in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What's your second highlight there, bud?
My second highlight is season 1, episode 20, Babylon Squared, the fourth Babylon station. Babylon 5's immediate predecessor, Babylon 4, reappears after vanishing. This is... The crunch. This is the sci-fi. We got time travel. We got flashes of that pasts that we don't even remember. We got one of the dopest Delenn plot lines of the whole show so far. Mm-hmm. It's got all the stuff you want. It's a bit of a messy episode, but I really enjoy all of the constituent parts.
Yeah, and it's also verging on you need it to understand what's going on in the show.
Right. It's important to know about Babylon 4 and why they were destroyed, and then also Delenn's actions for the rest of the series. You kind of have to know that she left the Grey Council
to understand.
Declined the leadership of the Grey Council to understand her. What do you got next?
My second highlight is By Any Means Necessary, season 1, episode 12. This is not really essential to understanding the plot of the show. This is the episode where there's basically a dock workers strike on Babylon 5, and Sinclair has to negotiate whether to side with them or to side with Earth Central, who are trying to have him like break the strike and put it down with this act called the Rush Act. And he ultimately is able to work out a solution where he pays them a little better. And he tricks Earth Central into letting him do it, and it's pretty fun. It's interesting from... I just think we had a fun kind of political conversation about it. And it shows angles on Babylon 5 that are worth thinking about. So, like, who are the kind of common working-class people here? How does Earth view Babylon 5? What's the relationship between the two? Things that I would imagine become significant as the show goes on. And then, like we talked about before, it has a really fun B-plot where Londo and Jakar are just screwing with each other.
Just children.
Which is kind of like the quintessential plot that you need in order to understand Londo and Jakar and their relationship.
I would argue that some of the aspects of this episode are essential because it's really hard to buy into a world like this one without answering the question of how do they handle labor, right. And what is the state of labor and unions and stuff in this future? So the show answers that and nudges towards some of that stuff. It's a bit messy, but it gets there, and I appreciate them for doing it.
Yeah.
Heck yeah. My last highlight before we get into our essential episodes is The Quality of Mercy, episode 21. We just talked about this one last week. This is the one where the doctor is going against Dr. Franklin's wishes, and she's using this alien device to give her life energy to her ailing patients. There's a criminal who's a horrible murderer that Talia tries to go into his brain and figure out what's going on. She's like, oh, God, that guy's terrible. And then he kidnaps the woman, and then she steals his life energy and gives him Lake Syndrome, which apparently is bad. And then, meanwhile, Londo and Lanier go out for a night on the town. Londo uses... what's the exact statement again? Londo uses his tentacle penis to cheat at blackjack, to cheat at poker. That's
all you need to know. That's the highlight.
I don't really have to say anything else about that.
No. I love Lanier.
I love Lanier. He's my sweet son.
Lanier.
It's an episode that covers like a wide range of the cast, if you think about it.
Uh-huh.
And it gives every plot something to do, whether that's giving you something to think about or it's Londo's penis cheating at poker. Our final highlight is season one, episode 17, Legacies. Legacies is the episode where these Mimbari soldiers come onto Babylon 5 and they have a Mimbari general's corpse, and they're giving him like this ceremonial funeral service. And then Delenn like steals his corpse because he was originally a member of the religious caste and she didn't think he'd want to be buried this way and yada, yada, yada. What I really like about this episode is that it is the first one to introduce to us the idea that Mimbari culture is fractured between the priests and the warriors.
Yeah.
Which is not something we had seen before. And I also really like the interplay between this Mimbari general guy and Sinclair, who have a kind of old animosity towards each other, but are able to put that aside and find mutual respect.
Yeah, you got
yeah.
good Delenn. You get good Mimbari development. It's all the stuff you want.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say it's a highlight in the sense that Delenn doesn't get enough chances to be cool.
Mm-hmm.
And her moment at the end of this episode where she tells off the guy and says, I'll sick the Great Council on you. I have that authority. Get the hell off my station. I get to choose what we do with this guy's ashes. It's just amazing.
It's awesome.
So good.
It's awesome.
Finally, I actually think we can do these ones a little quicker because you should watch these ones. We don't even have to tell you.
Yeah, we don't have to summarize them. We can kind of tell people like the one thing that they'll learn.
Yeah.
So they should be on the lookout for.
Here are the six essential episodes of Babylon 5 according to Chatsalon 5. Number one, episode one, Midnight on the Firing Line.
Watch the pilot. Also watch the movie beforehand.
Yeah, actually definitely watch the movie first because you'll need to watch that. Midnight on the Firing Line is pretty good. It's more important in just like you need to understand who these people are and how they relate. And it gets all of that done very quickly and efficiently.
Yeah, and it sets up Londo and Jakar really well.
Yeah, they're gonna kill each other someday.
Yeah. Season one, episode 8, and The Sky Full of Stars is the episode where we first are introduced to this idea that Sinclair is missing a day's worth of memories from the Earth-Mimbari War.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys come on board to try to get inside his brain and figure out what was missing from those days. So this is the episode that sets up the question of what the heck is up with Sinclair, which we don't have answered by the end of season one, but presumably it'll be answered at some point.
Right. This is a big setup episode, so you got to get this to get the payoff later. I'm going to next bring up episode 13, Signs and Portents. Morden is introduced in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Morden is probably going to be one of the most important characters in the entire series.
He's an agent for some sort of evil
organization
force.
Or something.
Yeah.
Morden goes around this episode asking every ambassador, what do you want? And we get those answers from different people. We see that he has an interaction with Kosh that seems potentially violent. They don't maybe like each other very much. Mm-hmm. Who knows? Another one where it's like, season one is called Signs and Portents. And this episode is called Signs and Portents. The most important stuff in season one is where they set up things that are going to be really nasty in the future. And right. This is one of them.
Yeah. Season one, episode 16, Eyes. This might be kind of a controversial essential. Because you could make the argument that it is, in the context of watching the whole season, this episode is actually kind of a throwaway.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, these like internal police or people posing as internal police come on Babylon 5 to interrogate Sinclair and his staff, Garibaldi and Divanova. And it doesn't really tell us anything new because he's kind of recapping like, oh, you did this in this situation, you did that. But if you're only going to watch six episodes of the show, or you're only going to watch like our essentials and our highlights, this actually fills out some of the key information that's introduced in other episodes.
Right.
So it recaps the actions taken by Sinclair in a few contentious moments. It really vividly shows you Ivanova's inner struggle around her mom and telepathy. It renews this, or it kind of reintroduces you to this idea that Sinclair was not the original choice to be the commander for Babylon 5, that he was selected by the Minbari. So all these different plot things are kind of converging in Eyes, just as a way of, for the show to say, look, we care about continuity and we're reminding you of these things. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, it's a good episode to watch if you're just trying to skim for like the most important information.
Yeah, this is actually a good recap episode, even if it's not intended to just be that.
Yeah.
My final essential here is A Voice in the Wilderness Part 1, whereas Part 2 kind of solves a lot of problems. Part 1 sets up Epsilon 3 as a factor in this conflict, and this is the planet that Babylon 5 is orbiting, and you know, there's an ancient civilization on there. At the end of this episode, we find out that ancient civilization has like Mott super future technology and a great machine that allows whoever's inside of it to see everything and be everything at the same time, like a god machine. It's sort of like, here's a lot of tech and a lot of power, and that we need to understand is available, and it's sort of a smoking gun left beneath the ship at the end of this.
And then finally, of course, the last essential is the season finale, season 1, episode 22, Chrysalis, because it just fucks up every character and leaves them in a pretty bad spot going into season 2. So if nothing else, you should understand what just happened to everybody so that season 2, episode 1 follows and makes sense.
Right. And you can just listen to our last podcast episode where we go very in-depth on what happens in this one. Everyone is either dead, missing, or a cocoon.
Or committed a terrible act of
Or curse.
Violence, yeah.
So that's the episode. That's season 1. Our final little segment here is a lot of people, since we are usually watching shows that other people have watched and are big fans of, love it when we try to predict, with our very limited knowledge, what's going to happen in the next season of the show. So do you mind if I go first here?
Go for it.
We know teensy bits of things just from like hints and Googling. So like there's a name I'm going to drop that I know with that there is a group called the Shadows.
Right.
Also, the next season is called The Coming of Shadows. So like, hey, guys, cool. I was predicting basically that those shadows are going to become a big factor. We're going to learn about them. We're not going to get to know any of them specifically. And then at some point, like once we know that there's a conflict, we'll probably meet one. And they will be like really cool. And then we're going to be like, oh no, now there's like a good shadow, but we have to wipe out all of them with like nukes or something. And it'll be like big. Well, that's what I'm saying. Like big war conflict. That's what I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. My hope, this is more aspirational, is that Londo doesn't spend the entire season miserable and finds something to get him out of the pact with Morden at some point. That's just aspirational. I don't know. Also aspirational, Veer becomes ambassador for the Centauri. Give me that.
Yes.
Give me that eventually, please. Jakar is on the Narn homeworld. He's probably going to be out of commission for season 2, but Natoth is going to be around.
Yeah, that sounds right.
That would probably finally give her a chance to do things. And the new sort of crew configuration has to reckon with the fact that while Babylon 5 is supposed to be a peaceful ship, with war on the horizon, they have to start gathering allies and figuring out which factions they can trust and take a side. Exactly. So that's sort of going to be the setup for the bigger plots. What about you, friendo?
So I've got a few predictions here. We know that we're going to get a new commander to replace Sinclair because we just know that, even though I guess we aren't supposed to know that yet. I would imagine that this new guy, he could either be exactly like Sinclair or he could be totally different. My prediction is he's going to be totally different.
And I really hope
so. He's going to be like a Warhawk kind of guy.
Yeah.
Or just like a hothead. And then Garibaldi is going to be like, whoa, dude, chill out. He's going to kind of become the foil to this guy.
I'm into that.
Delenn, I think, is going to continue to diverge from the Minbari. It seems like she's allied with them less and less. I don't know what that means necessarily, but we'll see. Lanier is, you know, he's going to have sex. That's my prediction. he's going to have real sex. And who knows what that's going to do for Linear. Earth and Babylon 5, I think, are going to continue to have tension and friction and maybe even, like, fight each other.
I'm into it.
Because it seems like now Earth is ruled by a dummy.
By a puppet for the PsyCorp, yeah.
Or by a puppet for the Home Guard.
Oh, yes, that too.
Or maybe both.
Yeah.
So we don't like Earth.
Mm-mm.
Londo is going to have to do something for these evil guys. That's going to, like, kill break someone my heart. We like. Break our
yes.
hearts.
Yep.
Veer is going to have to try to stop him. Maybe he kills Veer. Huh?
Or Veer kills Londo. Process. Just kidding. We know
or
that can't
Veer
happen.
Kills Londo, yeah. Mm. Yeah, we're not going to get Jakar for a while. And then he's going to come back and he's going to have, like, a leather jacket and, like, a mohawk. And he's going to be the president of Narn or whatever.
Of all of space,
yeah. And that's what's going to happen. And Delenn, oh, I already said Delenn. Well, then yeah. That's it.
That's the squad.
And we're going to learn nothing about Kosh.
Absolutely
and
not.
And that's it.
At this point, we made it a whole season. I just hope we never learn anything about Kosh. I think we have to, but I hope we don't. Just this eternal mystery, man. Eternal mystery toilet. And that, dear listener, is Babylon 5 Season 1.
Yeah.
22 episodes, 11 podcasts in the can, box it up, take it home, put it in the bag so we can start season 2. Cool. So we hope you enjoyed that. If you're a new listener and you're listening to this one as your first episode, welcome. Please make sure to join us for season 2 as we continue to dive into this madness. And let us take it to the plug zone. If you enjoy our podcast, you can send us feedback on Twitter at chatspod. That's chatzpod. You can also send us emails and do the same thing at chatspod@gmail.com. Please rate us on iTunes as well if you think the podcast is worth rating, and consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/chatspod, where we have a ton of bonus content like commentaries and bonus hangout shows, and it's a wonderful time. Mm-hmm. We would love that, and we would love you even more than we already do. I would like to thank our patrons real quick, if you don't
please
mind.
Do.
Thank I'll you. And thank you to, wait for it, wait for this webpage to load faster. Let's vamp. And it's Jonathan, it's Kat, it's Marcus, it's Fendon, and it's Tom. Thank you, patrons. You're the best. We love you. John, what's your chatsum for this week?
Oh, my chatsum is something that I'm actually purchasing right now.
Oh, boy. Is it a
because
sandwich?
I was opening it to talk about it. I saw on Facebook pop up earlier today that there is a new full-length tribute album to Carly Rae Jepsen's Emotion.
Oh, my God.
That is released by some group called Something Mary. And it brings together 15 different musicians and bands, each to create a cover of one of the songs off of her album, Emotion. And you can find it on Bandcamp. You should probably search EMO-TION. And you can pay whatever you want. The proceeds go to an organization called Immigration Equality, which seeks to help out immigrants who are also LGBTQ or HIV positive.
Wow.
So some of your money goes to that. And it's 15 covers of the amazing songs on the best pop album of all time. Emotion.
Carly Fair Rae enough. Egyptian's Emotion. I will actually check that out probably. That sounds super litty.
Yeah.
I'm going to recommend another podcast. I like recommending podcasts.
Do
because it. You're already listening to one. You might as well try another one. This week, I started listening to a show called The Sample Study, which is a music podcast from musician Tumelo. Tumelo has been doing, he was doing remixes for a while of like video game songs mixed with rap music for a couple years, and now he's branched out into original stuff and music inspired by other properties. But he started this podcast actually back in like mid-2017.
Okay.
And The Sample Study is a music show where he picks a sample from like a really famous sample from a song, analyzes the original song that is the sample, and then analyzes the song that samples it, and kind of talks about how they relate. And the way he describes it is like taking you from the musician in going to the record store, picking up this record, going, wow, this is cool, and then turning it into a song. And in his final segment of each episode, he recreates the sample himself. So being a music producer,
like cuts it up himself.
Yeah, he goes like, okay, so what they did is they slowed this track down, they isolated the trumpets here, and they made this, this, and this, and then that's how you get this rap sample that people really like that's really famous. Really interesting look at music production. Very easy to understand. Each of the episodes is like 20 to 30 minutes long. And there's a lot. They're not all even just rap music. There's like a big variety. But they're mostly rap music because that's where a lot of sampling is coming from.
Okay.
And, you know, this is like a common format on YouTube these days, is this like how to produce music thing. But in a podcast format, it works a lot better because it's like, you know, it's someone talking you through it.
What's it called again?
It's called The Sample Study.
The Sample Study.
A music podcast from Too Mellow is the name.
Cool. And if people are looking for like a few different music podcasts to try out and they're not listening to Song Exploder, that's also a good one. You listen to Song Exploder?
I do. Sometimes I listen to Song Exploder.
Yeah. Where Hrishikesh Hirway takes a song and like interviews the person who made it while pulling out all the different layers of it. And
yeah,
it's cool.
Yeah, so, we talked in our latest chat nights about how music like is so mystical and fascinating, and there's like a lot of work done to demystify how songs work.
Yeah,
it's very cool stuff. So check those out. And as always, thank you so very, very much for listening to this episode of Chat Salon 5. Peace.